Thank you all very, very much for staying on. I can imagine that you had a long day of absorbing amazing information that waits now on a shelf. It waits to be applied. When we hear so much information, we need to transform it into energy. It's almost like eating. After eating, the food should not just stay there in the stomach, but it should be entering a process of digestion where the nutrients are distributed over the body to give it health, energy, and so on. If the food would sit there, it would turn into toxins, just the opposite of what we want when we eat a nourishing meal. So it is likewise with visiting a seminar. So much comes into us, so much information is received. At the end of the day, it's important that we digest it. How? Well, we can first reflect about it and see what struck me, and then we can go to the next, let me say, function of digesting it. We can apply it. You have to see, everything may not be striking you in the same way, but there's certain things which resonate. And these things which evoke a reaction, a resonation, something happens, they are most properly the things which are the ones relevant for you and waiting for your digestion, your application, so that it can enliven your life, energize your life, nourish you in all possible ways, and help you to become a better version of yourself, if we may say like this. If you just let it sit down, or sit in with you, the knowledge, I have heard all this, you might even become hopeless. I'm a normal person, I will always stay the way I am. And that would be the reaction which we don't want, the reaction of the undigested food, which then turns into toxins and doesn't propel us forward. This just as a side point, and therefore in this concluding session, I will not give so much theory about meditation. I will actually meditate with all of you. I will invite you into a direct application of what you hear, so that you can get something beautiful, something that is an experience which you wish to maybe repeat. Good. Having said all this, let's go right into our subject, Metta, Meditate to Liberate. How nice you have composed this title, Meditate to Liberate. Since ancient times, I would like to say, meditation has been applied in Buddhistic monasteries and Indian ashrams. We have heard of yogis meditating for a long time. Even in the Christian tradition, there are contemplative practices where monks are encouraged to meditate about certain passages from Holy Scripture. You find it in Sufism, you find it everywhere, and you find it in the nature of the human being. I do remember when I was young, I would go into the garden of our family. It was a very wild garden with very, let us say, The trees were kept growing as they wanted to grow. They were bearing a lot of fruits, and I would sit in the trees. Especially, I would like to sometimes sit in the night, as young boys like to do something outside of the box, if you so want. And I would think, I would look in the universe, into the stars. And I was wondering, is there maybe another boy on another star which now looks into the wide, wide firmament and asks himself the same question as I? And more so, is there maybe a God who was holding all this together? And I slowly entered into a, you could say, meditative place where I, in the end, would just sit and try to connect with the divine presence of that Creator. I think every child in every continent has this, looking out in the night sky and starting to, in some ways, contemplate or meditate, or sitting down, shutting off everything else, and meditating. It's natural, that's my point. It's not only a traditional practice. It is natural to the human mind to unwind, and so on. The title today is Meditate to Liberate. From what should we liberate ourselves? Well, the everyday mind, where we are full of stress, where we are ruled by anxieties, is something to become free from. In the tradition which I practice as a monk, it's very nicely explained. We should liberate from a knot in the heart. Look at this knot. A knot has one particular characteristic. It shrinks everything. It makes it smaller. If I would add more knots to it, no more knots, the string would become very shrunken, very short, very limited. So in the same way, we all carry knots in the heart. I would like to outline the three most prominent knots. I have them written down here. It's fear for our survival. We are afraid. Will my health be out? Will my immune system be enough? Will I earn enough money to just eat sufficiently? Will I find a partner in this lockdown time? I'm getting old, my time is running out. Anxieties that are all surrounding the survival instinct are sometimes very, very big. When they are not solved, they sweep into the unconscious mind, and then I'm ruled by them. In a way that I'm a very insecure person. No, I'm not daring. I'm afraid to move forward. Another type of knot is when I feel a need for recognition. Oh no, no one recognizes me. No one thinks I'm important. When I feel emotional attachments to people, to even things, and they begin to occupy my mind and rule me. That's another thing I should think of solving, just like I need to untie a knot which severely limits something, which makes it shrunken. The third type of knot is called the Shiva Granti in our tradition. It's an intellectual pride. You want to you have a mood of self-righteousness. I have seen many marriages break apart. Even spiritual people can have that knot in the heart. They may think my path is better than the other path, and they become judgmental and so on. Self-righteousness, intellectual pride, and so on. All these bring us and limit us and rule our lives in ways that shorten the vastness, that make us limited and narrow-minded and ruled and not happy people. You know. So, yes, there are other things to become free from, but let us not take too much time. I would like to give you a little analogy which is given. It is about a person who stayed all his life in a closed room. Every day he went to the only door and he tried it. He wanted to open it, but it remained closed. It could not open. He grew old, and with him a lot of stress, a lot of frustration, a lot of problems heaped themselves up inside, and so much so that he was very ill, very bad health. The mind influences everything else in the body, no? Finally, at the end of his life, he went to the door. He tried it another time, and it opened very, very easily. It opened to the outside. If I try all my life to open this door by pulling it, I will remain a prisoner. But if I know how to open it in this way, pushing it, I will easily come out of the door. I won't be out of the room. Let me see. Good. So, this is what meditation does. It teaches us to open the door in the right way so that we can have a total different experience of life. It helps us to get out of the box where we have these knots inside that hold us tight. It helps us to move into freedom. That is one aspect of meditation. It makes us free in the mind. It helps us to leave behind fears, anxieties, concepts about the world and ourselves. The mind very often acts in two ways, as the jailer and as the prisoner. The mind puts us into these fears, anxieties, various forms of conditionings, we say in our philosophical language. And in this way, it is our jailer. And the mind can also make us very, very unfree, so that we feel like a prisoner. Totally overburdened. The inner critic always talks to us, you're not good enough, you're so useless and so unattractive and so foolish and so on and so forth. The mind is both the jailer and the prisoner. In meditation, there are various forms of meditation, and I would like to teach you two, which I will put in one. There's one meditation which I do every day for a minimum of 2 hours. It is called mantra meditation. Man means mind, and tra comes from the syllable triety. It liberates the mind from unwanted occupation, from this occupation where it jails us. It makes us free. That is a meditation which I would like to teach you. At the end, I will first, however, teach you just to become calm, to become more aware, to become alert through meditation. The mind can be compared with a lake, and very often the winds of what is going on in life makes waves, and we are very restless and unpeaceful, especially in a town of like London. I have seen people with stormy minds and wavy minds. So one task is to make the mind peaceful, and then we will chant a mantra which will bring us to another dimension. I will choose today the mantra Ram, and maybe we should do a Ram all together, so that you one time while you're not yet in a meditative state, chant it. I would like to request you to sit straight. Very good. I see some of you here sitting in a straight way. Ayan, you are not straight enough. You need to open your shoulder a little bit. Just create space. Yes, now we're getting there. That's also good for our breathing capacity. Sorry, Ayan, I picked on you. So, then let us do a deep inhale, and on an exhale, I will direct you when to do the deep inhale. We chant the mantra Ram. A very long, beautiful Ram. It is called a Bija mantra, a seed from which realization can awaken. So let us take it. I will do it one time alone, that's the easiest, and then we do. I will inhale. With closed eyes. And I'll produce the sound Ram. When you do this long enough and absorb your mind into the sound vibration of the Ram, your mind will become very peaceful. And you will see from the clear surface, the absolute calm surface of the mind, so many good spiritual things come up, because the calm mind has a natural state of goodness where there are so many treasures inside, like resilience, joy, and even when you go deeper, the feeling of bliss, it's an increased form of joy and so on. We will do this at the end of our meditation, and you will see when we all do this together, somehow we create a connection through, so simply us watching this, being on the same Zoom call. But for now, let us just go into calmness, and good. I request you again to sit straight. Please still look, do look in the room without really reacting on your environment. Just take it in as a video camera or the camera in your mobile telephone would take it in without comment. Oh, my room is a little messy. No. That's not, just observe it. I see there's a beautiful picture on my right side. I will adjust it a little bit. But for you, observe in an absolutely neutral way. Without saying, my room, my things. Just see, oh, how interesting. There's a lamb, there's a this, there's a that. And now, slowly, center yourself. Say to yourself, I will give myself now time to make a deep meditative experience. Relax your body. Go with your mind to your feet. Relax them. Your legs and bottom, relax them. Your upper body, relax. Go to your shoulders and the two arms. And relax, starting from the shoulders, going down. Maintain your posture. Now go to your face. Relax. We are all meditating, so we can safely relax. Our face will look different than in everyday life, but it does not matter. It is good if we relax. Now inhale and exhale. Close your eyes if you have not done so already. Stay incredibly aware as you observe your best friend, the breath. Now try something. As you exhale, exhale a little bit more. Go a little bit over the edge of the normal That will automatically free your shallow breath and make it a little vaster. Yes, you're getting there. Free and good breath. Liberating breaths, joyful breaths. Breathe in through your chest. Imagine the breath comes through the chest into your heart when you inhale. And as you exhale, it leaves, goes outside again. This is called the heart breath. Two more. Now, please, do not influence your breath any longer. Let it come naturally, as it comes and goes. You're now ready to bring your attention into the heart space. It is here where the self resides. It's in the space of the heart. This self is the real you. It is not affected by the outside looks of the body, nor is it identical with the passing thoughts. It is a part of the Supreme, of the Ultimate, the One with the many names, the Lord, God. The all-present divinity. Stay in the space. Stay in the heart space where both you, the Self, and the Supreme Self reside. Meditate. I am awareness. I am part of you. Just stay in this calm space where everything is okay. You are okay. Where the eternal truth resides. We will now introduce the syllable Ram. It is also a syllable denoting the Lord. We will use this syllable to just address Him, that eternal presence. We will do it 5 times together. I will first do it alone, then we will do it 5 times together. Let us slowly come back to room awareness. Slowly we can open our eyes. Maybe stretch a little or move a little on our seat. And open our eyes. So very much. It is a great honor and pleasure. When you start meditating, it's almost like learning a new language. You're not yet so expert, and there are a few glitches, mistakes, but if you continue, you will discover the natural goodness within you, the natural virtue within you, the natural vigor, strength, and everything. And you will feel always totally, now I will create a new word, or maybe it's there, you will feel unknotted. There is no knot any longer in the heart. You will be free. Because you have meditated to liberate yourself. You have gone into the heart space, and there you have remained. You have not engaged with knots. You have engaged with the self, and with the Supreme Self. Yes, it's my sincere hope that you will be able to take this with you. I must tell you, I do a similar meditation in I guess it's 3 minutes, you know, even when I'm in the car or in a flight, or if I know I have little time before I speak to large audiences and I know I should now calm down a little. I just break it down in three elements. I sit and center myself. Then I just take on in the environment in a neutral way. Because all of you have most probably these little instruments, like this instrument would see it. No? I just, in a neutral way, unjudgmental way, then I close my eyes. And after I have closed the eyes, I concentrate on my breathing. Here it is important that as you breathe, your mind is only with the breath. It settles, so to say, in the breath. No? It is no longer with the many thoughts. You just breathe in and you tell yourself, I know I'm breathing in. Or you're just staying with the in-breath. And when there is the normal chatter in the mind, you just withdraw for the time being from the normal everyday mind with the many thoughts. And then you just stay, and you will see, click, a door opens, almost like the door here, a door to the inside world, the rich inside world, where you are finding peace and so on. And now, this is now the important point. Don't just stay in the peace. Peace, yes, so many people think inner peace, that's the supreme achievement, but it goes much further. You can find, you go to yourself as an eternal being, and you connect with the Supreme Self in many, many other ways. If you are interested in further meditations, I think the Bhakti School is a perfect address to get more informations and so on. So I have someone with me here who's not kind to me. It's the time indicator. How do we say in English? The timepiece. It's a timepiece which measures time. We should end here and give a space for your questions. But thank you so far for your attention, and I'm very curious now to get some to connect with you as the people. I think Ian will tell me the questions now. Yes.
Thank you so much, Sachinandan Swami, for that amazing session. It really also has put me in such a calm mood as well. So I really, really do appreciate that, and I'm sure the audience appreciates that as well. Looking at the questions, one of the questions that has come up is anonymous, and it's being asked that, given our busy life and commitments, what's your advice on the recommended amount of time we can dedicate to meditation with or without mantras on a daily basis?
Given our daily busyness, I really believe in a regular program. You may not have many, many hours where you meditate in whatever way you do, but you do it regularly. And this regular activity will create something in you. Let me give you an example. When I came to England, I think the English people were the first ones who invented the kettle for boiling water so that they could have a good cup of tea. I always admired the English kettles. In Germany, we didn't have this. And now, if you want to boil water and bring it to the state where it's useful for tea, you need to keep a constant flow of electricity. You cannot switch it on and off, on and off, on and off, on and off. There needs to be steady input of electricity. In the same analogous way, you need to do your spiritual practice regularly, and then something is created. Something very deeply is created. Yes, I want to give you the example from my life. I do this mantra meditation now. I've counted. I have reached 50 years in it, and I just feel so different. And recently, I have been at a, you know, it's called alumni meeting, when the students from, let us say, the 10th class in the school come together, and they want to see where are you now and what are you doing. And they saw me and they said to me, you look very happy. When we knew you, you were always thinking so many things. That I said, what is your secret? They said, I said, regular mantra meditation. And it really rewires you, if you so want. But steadiness is here, the point. Don't look for quantity first. Look for steadiness. And as you become steady, you make such wonderful experience that you will want to increase your practice naturally, and you will find time. You know, we have all much more time than we think. Now, I remember when I once was in the Atlanta airport in America, there was an exhibition of Martin Luther King. I think you have heard about that pastor or priest who has really given equal rights to the black population of America. And there was a quote which I always remembered. It said, today I have so much to do, so much more. That means I should pray longer. I like this very much. Because you will quickly see, when you have a regular spiritual practice, time becomes your friend. You do things much faster, more efficient, without so much clouded things in the mind which come in between, and so on. But my answer here is, don't think now about the length. Think about the regularity. I would like to introduce to you a 7-day challenge. Yes, do this for 7 days and do a type of meditation. And there's a lot on the internet. You don't need to do this, what I did with you. And you can Google it, do the meditation, simple meditation, and then do it. Or as I want to recommend to you, as someone who has made so much good experience with the mantra meditation, learn in the Bhakti school. There are so many wonderful seminars which are offered. Learn the mantra meditation and just do it even for 10 minutes, 15 minutes a day, you decide, but do it regularly, and you will soon think, well, I have changed. People will say, you look so bright, what happened with you? You say, I learned to meditate. Thank you for the question. Yes, Ayan, is there another question?
Thank you so much, Swami. We have another question, and someone asks, and says, I have tried meditation, but at times I get demotivated to keep on going. How do we keep the practice ever revitalizing for ourselves?
There are three things which help you to revitalize revive, recuperate your practice if you so want. I would like to call them the three P's. P, like the letter P. The first is enrich your understanding by studying or reading philosophy about it. That helps you to, so to say, stay with this new practice that you want to know. And it convinces also you, it convinces you, it gives you, let me say, reasons, it clarifies doubts, so the philosophy. Then, the second P, people who are absorbed in the practice, or who are there. They can also help you to answer the little questions which you have, they can help you to remove obstacles, because most probably they have seen them and they have solved them. So people, second. The third item is practice. It gives you an experience, and there is no profounder or no more profound proof for anything than your own experience. My spiritual master is a wonderful, is an amazing realized soul, and also an accomplished teacher, really. And he traveled the world over and would give many lectures, and he addressed scientists, sociologists, you know, he had spiritual perspectives, how to organize society. He had answers from where everything came, answers for what is beyond the Big Bang even. He had things to say on theology. And once he was asked in a interview, he said, "Ultimately, you say that Krishna is behind everything and initiates everything. But what makes you so sure to introduce, let me say, the understanding of an origin behind all other origins to all scientists and philosophers?" And Prabhupada answered, "How can I not believe that there is a Krishna when I see him every day?" Krishna seen here as the karanam, the cause behind everything else. How can I not believe it if I see him every day in this function? So experience is the ultimate proof, I believe, for everyone. And this experience comes by practice. It doesn't come by anything else. In the time of the lockdown, where I was not moving so much, now it is much more free, I think, all over the world. It is slackening a little bit, the regulations. I started a practice of doing push-ups. When I started, two push-ups I made, which were the absolute torture. Now I'm doing 12, because I have practiced, and I see the benefit. The shoulders are free, I don't need to sleep so much. And the practice is the proof of the efficiency, really. I wanted to say the experience is the proof of the efficiency of any practice. And that experience is born out of repeated practice. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that, Swami. We have another question, and someone asks, how can meditation help us with negative thinking or dealing with situations that trigger anxiety and stress in our lives?
Very good question. Let me answer this question on a scientific and with a scientific explanation that is in absolute harmony with the philosophy of sankskaras. But I will take a modern way to express sankskaras. See, anxieties and so on, the things you wish to become free from, they happen when certain things are triggered, you know, when certain situations come and you think, and then anxiety comes up. And that is because the original experience which brought you the anxieties, the fear, and so on, has created inside of you a certain circuit. And when the same or similar trigger comes, it brings you into this circuit. Now, I would like to give you an example that happened I think it was Cologne, a town in Germany. There was a lady who just killed her husband with a knife. And this lady had been absolutely happy with her husband. When she was later interviewed, she said, I don't know, I love him. It was a mystery for the neighborhood who knew this relationship, husband and wife and the children. It was a mystery for the criminal police that investigated the lady who was so repentful and who could not explain what was happening. And they just didn't know, nor did she know, why she did this, I mean, this dastardly or this terrible act of stabbing her husband. They tried many psychologists to interview the lady and find out the reason to know what type of punishment would be appropriate and help the person but nothing was happening. No clarity came. Then finally, they found out that once that lady, as a young girl, maybe 17, 18 years, I forgot, but around this age, had been with a friend, her girlfriend, in town, and she needed to use the restroom briefly, and there was only this bar there, so she asked, can I use the restroom, please? And the barkeeper said, yes, it's there. And she used it and came out, and then as she was saying wanting to leave, some people came towards her from all directions and started to talk in an inappropriate way, you know, in an unpleasing way, you know. I forgot the details, but she felt highly unpleasant, and they came closer, and there was nothing going on. I mean, they were not attacking her or touching her or whatever. No, they just came closer, and she had felt so terrible and afraid and so on. But she could not escape. Finally, the barkeeper said, "What are you doing? This is a guest. Just go back to your table." And the people went to their table, and she went away. So at the moment, but that had created a circuit, an impression in her. And when the husband, how do you call this? Where you lean on the bar, iron, please tell me the English word, the table, or you know, where the barkeeper puts the glasses on. They had some... The table front, thank you. They had such a thing at home. And the husband somehow teasingly approached her, and she all of a sudden, the trigger brought her back into this terrible scene of her youth, and she became upset. She only did, there was a knife, and she took the knife and made a move, not really intending to stab her husband, but it went right into the husband, and the husband died. So we all have these circuits, and most of us don't come out of it. In ordinary language, we say we are always in our little box, or in English you say he's in the hamster wheel, right? We all have these, they're called neuro connections, which we have, and we always go back to them, and therefore we can never give up the old habits. Buddha Bhavana was telling us about habits and how to break habits. So meditation, here comes, listen very carefully, creates totally new circuits in you. Ways to think. And it equips you with that peace which is necessary at the moment when there is a trigger, to just step back, whoop, to have this ability, and then go into a better circuit. And not, this is it creates new. How do you say neurons? Neurons that fire together, wire together. You are rewired by meditation. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Swami. We have another question where someone notes and says, you mentioned the term Supreme Being a few times. What is a Supreme Being to you, and how do you describe it? Is it the conventional notion of God, or is it something else? And do the meditations that we do connect with this Supreme Being?
Since time immemorial, people have talked about the various aspects of God, and sometimes, sadly, they have quarreled. My version, my version, my version. Just the name, the word God has been very much misused. To control the masses. What the Supreme Being is in my tradition is something really, really vast and expansive and inclusive. On one hand, the Supreme Being is present everywhere. That's the Brahman. He has that aspect of all-pervading presence. Therefore, sometimes I say the divine presence, because he's everywhere, and everything is contained in him. Vast, vast, vast. On another aspect of that same Supreme is person in the heart, God in the heart, the Supreme Self, he's called, the Super Soul, with whom you can communicate, where you can also ask questions and get answers. No? We all have this experience that something comes, arises from that space in the heart. We don't know from whom it comes, but we can assume that there is a divine wisdom that never fails. No, we say, I know in my heart it's true. This is Paramatma in Sanskrit, or the Supreme Self in English language, in the heart. No, and then finally, there is the divine being who is engaged in loving exchanges, where only love counts, only pleasure counts. We have a philosopher, maybe you have heard, Friedrich Nietzsche. Nietzsche, you have heard this, Ian?
No, myself.
No problem. He said, I would believe in a God who knows how to dance and play his flute. A very influential philosopher, Friedrich Nietzsche, you would say in English. He is indicating somewhat, maybe unintentional, to that Lord of love, that playful Lord, the Lord of all beauty, the Lord of all mercy, the Lord of everything, that of everyone. That is Krishna. So all these threes are Krishna, God, the all-pervading presence, the Supreme Self next to the Self, and the heart, who's always there guiding those who seek his guidance, and that supreme loving being who's full of mercy, who's playful, who lives in a world of joy, far, far, and love, far, far beyond the universes which come and go like air bubbles in the water. Yes.
Thank you so much for that, Swami. And seeing that our time is almost up, actually, we've gone a little bit over time. But there's one more question that I thought that I would actually add as well.
Please.
Someone asks, what's been your motivation to maintain this practice for all these many years and still keep on being blissful and happy?
My motivation? It's more than anything, I believe, my own experience. But obviously there are moments when we don't experience the highest states of consciousness, Otherwise I would be a liberated soul at this state, a total enlightened being. There are moments of divine experience which one recalls. But in times when I feel also that there is not the divine experience, I have seen how the contact with people helps me to stay motivated. I made today such a beautiful experience of how people can give you energy. See, my father is 95 years old. And we are all coaching him. You can make it 120 years, no problem. He's still very alert. He had now a terrible lung infection, and he notified the family, I'm leaving now, 95 years is enough. But the thing is, he is in a hospital, and due to the present health crisis, everyone is highly afraid that people who come into the hospital might carry a virus, and there will be more infection. There will be infection, and as a result, his wife cannot see him. And they are very, very good. Have a very good marriage. So my father said, "Well, I'm now dying. It's enough. Please don't lament. 95 years is more than sufficient." But then I called him and said, "How can you do this alone in a hospital? That is not in good style." I said, "As a son, you can say like this. You should be with your wife, and you should continue to have your conversations. They read together various things on science. They're very alert people, and study so much cultures and so on. That is better." And he said, "Okay, I will pull through it." And I know he will, because mind is stronger than matter. People, this is my point, can encourage us to go beyond our normal limits. Yes, you can, Ian can check me later if that is true, if he pulls through it. But I feel very happy because I know he will do. He's such a person. So people is the next motivation. When we are not so strong, when we are weak, then good people who can give us so much energy. And the third is, again, I repeat myself, I find great, great happiness in my daily practice. Really great energy and so on. So that is a very, I thank you all. I will have to go now, even if there are more questions. You please allow me to go. It was genuine pleasure. And Ian, I have seen you before, but today we did something together. So this is very nice. That is very, all of you. I see Buddha Bhavana's good name is there. Shiva, Lakshmi, then Don. So many of you are there. I can only see so many. Dushan, Anand, Philip, Parul, Pritesh, Pramila, Asha, Geeta, Rikesh, Deepak, Galaxy 13, wow, this is cosmic. Galaxy R40 even. And all of you, we could go through many, but that would take the too much time. I thank all of you very much. And please take one thing home. Peace, calmness, eternity, the self, the unlimited supreme being is so close. You just need a little spiritual practice so that you can get out of the knotted existence. Where you are forced by your knotted mind to go the same circuits over and over again. And meditation, and I can say especially mantra meditation, is a good way. Please try this, and don't forget regularity. Why not start a 7-day challenge? Right, starting from tomorrow, what is tomorrow? Monday and do something. I thank you very much, and I wish you a good evening and all the best.
Thank you.